that in other ways. It can be in monthly or quarterly transit passes. It can be in bike share memberships. The idea was to make it enough that if two people lived in an apartment, they could each have a six-month pass, but to provide flexibility so that the ultimate building manager can do whatever works best for them. It is not a fee. This is an obligation that they would have for their tenants.
And how long does they have to provide that?
In this step one, it's just upon building opening.
So just 1 year?
Yes, and in fact, if they decided to make several three-month passes, they could extend it longer than that. But the obligation would occur only at building opening.
The parking stays with the building for a long time, so it just seems...
It's true, and that's
very
one
inadequate.
Of the... And because of the complexity of maintaining that obligation with the building managers over time, that's one of the key reasons that we had to take some more time to figure out the administration of that. Because it would be really desirable to have the ability to have something ongoing. So I agree. Couldn't figure it out.
It's an intent, but and we just are recognizing a lot of logistical hurdles to have the enforcement and oversight and just the systems in place to be doing ongoing management of that kind of program.
But if we could figure it out, it would certainly be preferable because, I mean, people change their behavior, or are more likely to change their behavior when they move. And obviously people will be moving into new buildings, you know, periodically, not just when the building first opens. But logistically, I think it is difficult.
It's a huge burden for people who maybe, I mean, we all know how high rents are anyway. So you get your first year of transit and then you're going to have to pay by yourself $1,000 for your transit pass. And then I don't know how it takes care of people who need alternative mobility.
I'm encouraged that this is what you're raising, because it is important to us that we can try to figure out a way with the administrative complexities of doing that.
Especially given the discussion we had at the beginning of transit not taking care of people, particularly in the outer neighborhoods, which are particularly the places where people who need affordable housing will go. So the concept that everybody living at 148th and whatever is going to be biking to their job anywhere, it's just not happening and just not safe.
I'm in complete agreement. Remember, even this is brand new for almost all of these developments. So if we can get this, kind of get our foot in the door and hopefully gain some acceptance around the concept of it and take some time to figure out how we can have a more ongoing system. And not only that, which is actually getting into the step two scope, the main items we want to discuss, but there are a lot of existing residential developments, and this is only dealing with new developments. So what we really need to do is find ways that we can expand the overall TDM provision to the private sector.
Well, so let's flag this one, because I agree with this concern. Incrementalism has its place, but if we are conferring the benefit of new mixed-use zoning on a lot of property, I can't think of a better time to also impose a significant mandate if we need to, rather than a baby step mandate. So I appreciate Commissioner Fitz raising that question. Let's flag that one for more discussion, as we may want to go farther than you have in the original proposal.
Although, I mean, we can't force developers or the owners of new buildings to pay for everybody's transportation needs in perpetuity. I mean, what we do now in many places is we require them to build expensive parking, which they then recover in higher rents.
And I think that the number I've heard is $50,000 for a parking spot. So this is, it's just not helpful. And that we need to have a significant analysis of the equity issues for people who just can't use transit to get to their midnight job or back home from it.
The Planning Commission did hear quite a bit of testimony, and I think you will too, about the cost of this and what it does to the ability to provide affordable housing, and it is likely to be passed through to rent, and so that's part of the discussion that you'll have.
So that is the most significant part of this step one that we're proposing at this stage. The other is simply to an obligation to participate in a travel survey that we would administer. And then an information program that would be equivalent to and even could be our own Smart Trips program. So next is step two, and this is what identifies the items that Commissioner Fritz has already identified. Well, first of all, we want to make sure that we're integrating it with more, very, very specifically with parking management measures. An opportunity to include existing development has come up because this is only new development and we have a lot of existing development out there. If we can find ways to tap into that. But the ongoing commitment for new development. This is only applying to the mixed-use zone, and we want to also develop an appropriate strategy for the central city. These are just a few of the items that were coming up in the course of the Planning and Sustainability Commission's hearing on this topic. So next is the campuses and institutions. The CI zone is another one that you were briefed on last week. With the development of the creation of the new zone, a lot of the development approval requirements are vastly simplified or even removed. They're just allowed by right now. Primarily, those are the on-site design, building massing, that sort of thing. We're really not able to do that with transportation because campuses and medical institutions are widely varying in the populations they serve, the kind of function that they play, and the related impacts on parking and transportation. So, for example, Lewis and Clark College, PCC Sylvania, they're in a pretty similar geographic area, very similar transportation system and services in those areas, but a 50,000 square foot classroom building in one versus the other would just have entirely different impacts. Lewis and Clark has a lot of people who live on campus, mostly full-time students. PCC is serving a lot of folks with evening classes, part-time, returning students. So we don't, unlike most zones where you can take a commercial zone and or a residential zone and apply an average trip rate or parking rate, we can't do that. We have to do a case-by-case basis. So in Title 33, for transportation, it points to a transportation impact review, which is a 3 to 10 year look in both a traffic impact analysis as well as a transportation demand management plan. It's actually quite similar, I think, to what is currently in place. But what is different, of course, is that it's now handled through a type 2 approval process. So the campuses and institutions right now are some of the providers of the best TDM programs that we have. PCC has an extensive shuttle system that most of us have seen, the shuttle buses going around. Lots of them have dedicated staff. Providence Hospitals just hired a full-time staff just to administer their TDM program. So it really isn't new for them to do it. They have a lot of great, a lot of subsidies of transit passes and things like that.
Commissioner Fritz, something. I'm spending more time in Washington Park these days. And, you know, we had a big fight about TDM there and setting up the shuttle bus. And now we have a shuttle bus system. How is that impacting people's behavior?
I think people are still driving, and we're quite concerned. I think we'll hear tomorrow about the development that's going to be happening there and how there isn't adequate parking in the park, so that it tends to spill out over the neighborhoods.
Are we finding that people are taking the MAX and then getting on the shuttle bus to visit a number of venues?
Some are, but again, it's the people with lower incomes who it's still cheaper to drive to Washington Park and pay the parking fees than it is to get a family of five on the bus and take a long time getting from East Portland to see the park. So that's something that the Explore Washington Park, which is the new name for the Transportation Management Association, is looking at because it really hasn't solved the parking problems.
So getting back specifically to what is changing with the new CI zone, the approval process is a type 2 now. And so what we've tried to do is, also Title 33 expands the types of mitigations that can occur for traffic impacts more specifically and deliberately to be multimodal and including transportation demand management. There are times when, given our current performance measure, that if an intersection is over capacity, but it might be in an area where it doesn't meet any of our other goals and might have significant impacts and costs to expand the capacity, we want to be clearer that you can use other strategies to mitigate the impact of that development. So that's a part of Title 33, but it does provide greater flexibility to the development process. So in our discussion, some of the key themes that we heard and that you may have heard or will be hearing in testimony, I think we've tried to address them, but they really, the desire to have a very clear and objective evaluation in the type three, when these would go to a hearings officer, it was case-by-case basis, and sometimes seemed to be subjective, and that would add to a lot of uncertainty and then delay, and therefore cost for the development process. We're trying to improve that. Also, they wanted clarity that if they have a current TDM plan, that that would be the starting point for any updates. So we certainly agreed to that. They wanted some ability for the performance targets. We have a citywide performance targets. They just wanted to make sure that the performance targets could reflect the unique location and options that are in each location. So we've done a couple of things to address that, including a provision that they can propose an alternative performance measure based on certain criteria we've identified. And then perhaps most important, not to have any mandated specific requirements, so such as, do I have to start charging all of my employees for parking? No, we have not mandated any specific TDM strategies. What we've done is saying, we want you to track what the performance is related to the performance metric in the TSP, the multi-split standard.
And one of the questions I'll have is, how does that affect OHSU, where in fact we do require parking employees to pay for parking? How have you structured it to allow for that as well? I don't need the answer now, though.
The short answer is it doesn't affect OHSU. The OHSU is in an EX zone and has its own plan district, which we're not amending.
So very specifically, the specific evaluation requirements in Title 17 are that they must be, and this gets back to not having very specific mandates about you must charge for parking and you must provide this much subsidy. Instead, we said you must be in compliance with your neighborhood engagement agreement, which are usually housed elsewhere, but they have to be in compliance. They must be in compliance with the reporting requirements. The State Department of Environmental Quality does an every other year survey of travel, and we're just asking that they send that to us, not that they do a new one. Then we would be evaluating their mode split trend relative to the performance targets, or they could have somebody else do that. And then we just want to, there is some subjective analysis that the current strategies can achieve the performance targets, and if the trend isn't going in the right direction, we have identified where the best opportunities are for the next strategies. So that's where we ended up in the code for that. So in summary, we have the two sections, the pre-approved plan for mixed-use zone, and then sort of clarifying and refining the requirements for campus institution. And then that future work outside of this stage two is getting at some of those issues that you were raising that we've also been discussing.
One of the issues we raised last week was just the date at which the new code takes mandatory effect and the period of time during which the institution can choose to continue to finish up their existing master plan, and that conversation was very closely tied to this TDM question because institutions were nervous that we were going to take them off of their schedule for updating their plans, and that was why we had that debate.
If you could also give me a briefing offline about the neighborhood engagement requirements, interested to know how much money's been involved in that, because that's a new something. And also, how can you have something that's a neighborhood engagement requirement in a clear and objective standard so it's no longer a conditional use?
So Commissioner Fritz is going to want some more time with you offline. I am too. So obviously between now and the October 6th hearing, is that the first one? Between now and the first hearing would be a good time to do that. I'm going to ask Camille to set that up. I've got a list of issues based on this presentation that I want more discussion time with you about before we get into the public hearing, but you've done a good job today of running us through them all. But there's a lot here and a lot of areas where I think you already hear that council is going to want to bear down and say, well, maybe we want to go farther in some direction than either you or the Planning and Sustainability Commission have gone so far. So you've ID'd a couple of those. I have as well. So Steve, we'll talk to you and your staff and set that up and have some more discussion time than we were able to put into the schedule today. But thank you for getting us this far along and a lot of stuff on the table. Thank you. Thanks very much. All right, we're going to move immediately into our next work session. And we have staff already here. This is a follow-up to council direction back when we passed, when we unanimously passed our resolution about fossil fuel facilities and fossil fuel exports, there was a request that we have a work session at the council before we get into a formal public hearing. Obviously, the Planning and Sustainability Commission has already been working on this proposed set of code issues, and Susan and her staff are here to walk us through that and have some time for council discussion before we get to a hearing in a couple weeks. I don't think we do. Maybe I have it here, but okay, there we go. One for number two. Dan's not here, I don't think. Okay, Susan, please take it away.
So thank you, Mayor. Good morning. As the mayor mentioned, last year you all adopted a resolution to oppose the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure in Portland. And in addition, as part of the comprehensive plan, you set a policy to limit fossil fuel distribution and storage facilities. You adopted the resolution for several different reasons. Among those, the first issue was